Good evening, Reading, and ladies in red and Reading, and gentlemen of Reading. This is the Dr. Orna Gill Show. Dr. Orna Gill here at your cervix tonight, Thursday night, 6 p.m. We are live at KCNR, 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, your talk radio. Thank you for joining us tonight. We have with us three pillars of the community. Linda Bott, the brilliant and talented and beautiful Linda Bott, the brilliant Dr. Sean Dugan, and the very, very influential and brilliant Angela Jones. We'll be talking about violence, domestic, sexual, and the way that we can deal with it, how we identify it, and those repercussions that follow. So I'd like to get started with introducing everybody, and I'd like you all to introduce yourselves, if you don't mind.
Well, I'm Angela Jones. I am the executive director of One Safe Place here in Reading.
I'm Dr. Sean Dugan. I'm a forensic medical examiner here in Reading, and I work with the Outer Counties as well.
I'm Linda Bott, and I'm a fan, and I'm here tonight to learn some staggering, I'm sure, information that will change our world forever. In this moment.
Thank you. And I am Dr. Orna Gill. I am a local gynecologist working at Shasta Regional Medical Group and out of Shasta Regional Medical Center. Also wanted to take time to mention that this is the North State Now program, and it is brought to you by our sponsors, Shasta Regional Medical Center, our title sponsor, the Reading Civic Auditorium, and also Carlene's Bar and Restaurant, and the Black Bear Diner. So welcome, and thank you for all of your support. I wanted to start out tonight, by talking about the statistics. What are we really dealing with? And also talk about some definitions. I can talk about a little bit in general that the CDC basically says that 19.5% of women will experience sexual assault in their lifetime, and 3% of men will as well. 2 to 3% of men will experience sexual assault. Out of those, only about 15 to 20% of people report those assaults, and there are different definitions that we can get into. I wanted our guests to talk a little bit about what their experiences are, what stats they have for our community, and that way we can tailor our talk to about what really matters in our community, and from there we can expand globally.
For One Safe Place, over this last year, our sexual assault visits were 198, and the law enforcement responses were 137. It isn't uncommon for a rape crisis center such as ours to see a more significant number than law enforcement will. There's a lot of fear on a victim's part about coming forward to report.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what are the reasons for that? Why do people fear reporting?
So, I mean, it kind of goes along with we have our Change the Culture campaign, and that's, I think, one of the great things about Reading is we live in a community where we really do have the ability to affect change. But our country has a long history of victim shaming and victim blaming.
Yeah.
You know, oftentimes the questions that come about first off to a victim are, what was she wearing? What were you wearing? Were you drinking? You know, That really shouldn't matter, but that is how it comes along. We've all seen that play out in the media, and so there's fear around that for a victim. And that's part of the, you know, culture of violence that we have going on in our community. And how we change that is we change the questions and how we look at those scenarios when they come up. Hmm. So a better question might be, you know, what was he doing? Why was he there? What was his intent? Instead of having the onus placed on that victim, because I think it's a disservice to men when people ask that question about what was she wearing, as if men are animals that don't have any control if they see some cleavage or a thigh. You know, that's just not right. That's insulting, right?
Mm-hmm. It is in our culture, but in other cultures, it is completely forbidden to even see an ankle.
Right.
Or some cultures even have just one eye available to see for a woman out of her burqa. Mm-hmm. You can only see through one one hole so that both eyes won't be visualized.
Right. And so that's maybe where we get into a little bit of gender inequity.
Yeah.
That's a global thing, not just a local thing, but that certainly plays a part not only in sexualized violence, but in domestic violence,
right.
because women's roles are minimized. And, you know, many of us participate in ways that we don't intend to in the community when we make dumb blonde jokes or that women are bad drivers or they belong barefoot in the kitchen.
Mm.
It minimizes their roles in the workplace and in the home and then accentuates the male privilege component of that because both sexual violence and domestic violence are based in power and control.
Uh-huh.
It isn't about the sex and it isn't about the beating.
That's right. That's right. And it's interesting if you look at the statistics also, even before you enter into the concept of domesticity, when you look at college students, 30% of college-age women ages 18 to 24 report rape in college. So it is extremely prevalent, and 80% of those rapes are basically date rapes that are fueled by alcohol and drugs, the most common drug being alcohol. And that's sort of where we were talking about earlier, how it's difficult under some circumstances to report, remember, and that kind of thing.
Right, because I went out with them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I did have a drink. So then there's that guilt on the victim's part of maybe I put myself in this situation.
Right, right. And there are other things to look at. Well, we can talk a little more about how to identify you know, work up toxicology for these patients or victims, how to take care of them. I wanted to bring Dr. Dugan into the conversation and hear what you have to say about, you know, the work that you do around violence, sexual violence, domestic violence, and that kind of thing, and bring your perspective in to this conversation.
Absolutely. I originally started off doing the taking over the pediatric sexual assault program at Chaskabinney Health Center years ago and evolved that into a child abuse program across my health center and the local hospitals. And we quickly saw the need to develop an adult abuse-like program. Mm. Adult sexual abuse is taken care of very well by Shasta Regional Medical Center, but when it comes to domestic violence exams or strangulation exams, we didn't really have a team to really respond to that from the medical side, you know, for a medical forensic exam. And so after a recent conference, actually, where Angela, myself, and our colleagues went to, we decided we're going to develop a clinic at One Safe Place for domestic violence victims. And actually, within 1 week, we got it up and running. It was actually the conference ended, I believe, Saturday or Sunday, and we had the first clinic that Friday. So we were able to get that off the ground. And we've had all but one be female victims. We had one male victim recently, actually, but it's a predominantly female victims that we're seeing. And this makes sense with what we know from the statistics, because 99% of people who strangle are men, and most of those victims are female. And so we're definitely seeing that trend in the clinic that we have so far. And so we are seeing about 3 to 5 victims a week. Most of them are scheduled, but we do take drop-ins and walk-ins. And we work closely with our partners in the other agencies to make sure these victims receive the best services they can, and working with law enforcement and the other agencies as well.
It's interesting because the specific strangulation aspect of this program seems to me like it's not something that I've ever heard of specifically being the focus of the assessment. Can you explain why that is a focus at this time?
Sure. And strangulation can often only have visual findings 50% of the time. And so I think the biggest misconception in general is that if you're strangled, you're going to have a lot of bruising on your neck or other signs. And that's really not the case. That's not what we see. And so if we see findings, great. We'll take photographs, and those help help with our collection of evidence. But I go in there expecting not to see anything. And there are a lot of subtle findings beneath the skin that we can document with our examinations. And more importantly, strangulation carries a large risk, and that risk is something called carotid artery dissection. And what that means is sometimes during the strangulation, the forces applied cause a tear in the blood vessel. And that tear can form a clot. And that clot can hang out there for about a year. And at any point in time, that clot can go up into your brain. And if it does, it can cause a stroke, which can be fatal if not very disabling for that person. So this clinic seeks to identify those victims at high risk and get them the CT scans they need.
That's fascinating and a very, very, very interesting and important topic for us to continue to talk about. We're going to take a quick break. This is Dr. Orna Gill taking you into a commercial moment. This is KCNR 96.5 FM.
At Shasta Regional Medical Group, we're focused on the health matters that matter to you, like preventive care. Our physicians are committed to keeping you healthy with the right vaccines and wellness checks for your children. For seniors, we can review prescriptions to make sure you're on track. At Shasta Regional Medical Group, you have an integrated network of caregivers and specialists working to serve you in a compassionate, patient-centered environment. We're conveniently located right across the street from Shasta Regional Medical Center. To make an appointment, call Shasta Regional Medical Group today at 605-4260 or visit us online at ShastaRegionalMedicalGroup.com. Shasta Regional Medical Group. Your primary care is our primary concern.
Hi, I'm Dr. Kara Tennant with CARE Animal Hospital, and I'm inviting you to join me on the Carl and Linda Morning Show. We will be discussing all of Redding's local pet needs and how to keep your pet happy, healthy, and safe. CARE Animal Hospital is a local veterinary clinic located on the corner of Hilltop Drive and Lake Boulevard. Make sure your best friend has the best possible care today.
Join Dr. Kara Tennant the third Friday of each month in the 8 a.m. hour here on locally owned KCNR.
The Cascade Theater presents four free films and a whole lot of fun this July with the Kids Summer Movie Club. Every Sunday afternoon in July, the theater opens the door at 2 with completely free admission for everybody. Turtle Bay will be there to show off some animals and hand out prizes. There's activities and then the film at 3, featuring Monsters, Inc., WALL-E, Cars, and Brave. Four films, four Sundays in July. Sponsored by JPR, KIXE, First 5 Shasta, and Turtle Bay. See you there.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
Learning is fun at Turtle Bay Exploration Park. Join us this summer for Maker Wednesdays with drop-in activities designed for all ages to make, create, collaborate, and discover something new. Bring your preschooler for our Little Explorers program every Thursday at 10 a.m. Turtle Bay also offers family and science programs every second and third Saturday each month. Turtle Bay's ongoing education programs are included with admission and always free for members. Visit turtlebay.org for upcoming events.
Welcome back, Redding. This is Dr. Orna Gill at the Dr. Orna Gill Show, hosted today by myself here with the brilliant Linda Bott, brilliant Dr. Sean Dugan, and the brilliant Angela Jones, all of us talking about the very important and complicated web that is surrounding violence, both sexual and involving strangulation, eventually other kinds of types of violence, both domestic and in general. So we just wanted to mention very quickly our sponsors, Shasta Regional Medical Center, and our chief title sponsor, the Redding Civic Auditorium, also Carlene's Bar and Restaurant, and Black Bear Diner. We are very thankful to them for their support. Once again, this is KCNR 96.5 FM, 1460 AM. And we are North State Now program at your cervix with Dr. Orna Gill. So let's talk again about, we talked a little bit earlier, Dr. Dugan, about strangulation and how the subtle forms of strangulation can be picked up. and we wanted to talk about why is strangulation an important identifier? Why is it important to focus on? How does that lead us to better understand violence or anticipate it? I want to ask Angela and Dr. Dugan what you think about these issues.
Well, for us, we do, when a victim comes to us, in order to assess the situation that they're in, we do use Jacqueline Campbell's lethality assessment. Strangulation is a key indicator for lethality. We know in the case of strangulation that if a perpetrator puts his hands or any form of blocking airway or blood flow, that it increases the likelihood of homicide by 750%. So it's really important that people out there listening, if they're in a situation and that's something that's happening through a violent perpetrator or even through consensual sex, which is something that happens nowadays, that there is a huge risk, you know, on the medical side with the consensual and on the violent side of homicide.
Mm.
Huge.
Are you telling, just to clarify, so if it's consensual during, you know, sex, is it?
That's the medical risk side.
Oh, okay.
The violent perpetrated side is the 750% likelihood of lethality increased.
Mm-hmm. I see. And what other forms of violence is it something like linear where you start with strangulation, you end up mass murder, or how do you really
connect it?
Yeah.
Well, we went to a wonderful training put on by the Alliance for Hope and their Strangulation Institute, and we have found that mass shooters and the people that are perpetrating, you know, shooting of our law enforcement officers, as they've dug into these cases, what they have found is family violence in the background, and then digging deeper, strangulation is a common denominator for these things. And I think, I don't know if we were talking at the break, but a lot of these perpetrators have come up through families where there were violence. There was either domestic violence in the home or child abuse. And we know in our statistics that 2/3 of children that grow up in homes with violence either turn out to be a victim or a perpetrator themselves.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's really just that cycle of violence repeating itself. And that's what the statistics that Angela mentioned support. And so most people think, too, with strangulation, that's the way the perpetrator is going to kill the victim. That's actually not. Most of the time when they're going to kill their victim, they actually use a handgun. And so it's not actually by strangulation that they actually kill their victims. It's just an escalation. And strangulation is sort of one of those last, like, you know, ultimate acts of violence where if we can intervene, we could really make a difference and save this person, save the people around them. You know, digging into it more, I mean, we coming across more child abuse from these, you know, and I've had other child abuse cases prior to this clinic where we knew there was strangulation, either the victim, the child, or the mother, you know, and so it's not just usually the mother that's suffering. There's other people in the home that could be suffering as well from the abuse.
And with Dr. Dugan, you know, in the clinic and being able to share these medical pieces and that risk that's there, we have seen an increase in willingness on the victim's part to report, which has been really great because we know these are the most dangerous guys that we have in our community. And by being able to focus in on this clinic, make people safe and have that reporting, then hopefully that is going to put these guys away and get them off of our streets before anything happens.
Absolutely. That's definitely a laser focus because it's not something that I was educated about before. That's very, very, very informative.
So now when somebody comes in and there is a strangulation in the records, that is a big red flag. I mean, maybe 5 years ago or before this has really come to with the studies and come to light, that maybe 5 years ago it was like, oh, well, it's a game. But now there's just heavy proof of what it's leading to. 750, you're saying, percent of people that can, it turns into fatality.
That statistic's been around for a while, and we've always talked to our clients that come in about that piece. But unfortunately, that hasn't been enough. That hasn't always been enough with the reporting piece of it because there's that fear of reporting. With Dr. Dugan, able to share that risk, to do the documentation that he does, and then working with law enforcement, that has really changed the game.
I go into great detail with my notes in the physiology of strangulation and the events. And it's funny, there's actually a study in 1944. And this study is amazing because it's what we use in forensic medicine for strangulation. And it was a Rosen study, and he recruited, I quote, volunteers for this study from prison. And he had built this medieval-looking contraption to strangle them. And he would measure the times till they passed out, till they had a seizure, till they urinated. Barbaric as it is, and we couldn't do that now, we use his study because we're able to pinpoint if the victim reports loss of consciousness, that's 6.8 seconds. If they report urination, that's 15 seconds. And a lot of times that information is very useful to our colleagues in other agencies to know. And it's also useful for me to know because strangulation also carries other risks, like traumatic brain injury, which is one of the leading causes of disability throughout the country. Many of these women report chronic memory problems, chronic headaches. They really suffer for the rest of their lives from these problems. And so if we're better able to identify that as a sequelae of the strangulation, we can get them services and support that they need to treat those long-term, sometimes chronic disabling symptoms.
For sure. I mean, one of the interesting commonalities that both of our fields have in studying violence against women, children in a domestic realm is that women who experience sexual violence tend to have much higher incidences of pelvic disease. And so you'll see chronic pelvic pain, a lot more fibroid disease. You'll see higher rates of cervical cancer, significantly higher. Higher rates of, obviously, pelvic inflammatory disease. Then there's always PTSD and the kinds of things that happen from there. And then other things like abuse of barbiturates, opioids, different eating disorders, all kinds of things that you see in women's health that translate out of these experiences. And so it's important to identify what is causing these things, and maybe you can even go back and try to figure out how to prevent it. And that's one of the things I wanted also to speak with you, Angela, about, because you are campaigning a huge new culture-changing philosophy that is starting to... I want you to explain it very, very carefully and in very layman's terms for those of us who are not experts in, you know, sociocultural issues. Explain your concepts of how you want to intervene and make these changes in violence in our world.
So the idea is to talk about issues like we're doing right now and to talk about where that intersects with the public in ways that aren't necessarily welcoming for a victim. And then so bystander engagement is one component that is really important. So when you see something, when you hear it, act on it. There are many ways to do that. You can call law enforcement. You don't have to put yourself in this situation. If it's safe, you can ask somebody if they know the time or do something to disrupt that violence that's going on at the time. If you're out at a bar with friends, don't let that friend go off with somebody alone. You know, stay together, use the buddy system. It's things like that that are going to help make the difference. And then beyond it, what you were just talking about and going back to the root, when we know that families in domestic violence, these are generational cycles, and we talk about child abuse and all these things, that those are adverse childhood experiences. And the greater risk factors that you talked about with women's health and all of that plays out of adverse childhood experiences, right? That leads to higher risk behavior. It leads to incidents of smoking and poor grades and shorter lifespans of up to 20 years. There are a lot of impacts. So if we really look at what's going on with our families and with children, that is where we are going to make, you know, that greatest shift in our culture and change things the way they are for that next generation. The bystander engagement and the making people safe and making victims feel like it's okay to share when something happened that they're going to be believed, those are the now things. But that when we're trying to actually make a change in our society and with our families and with our children, that is where it's going to start, is eliminating ACEs from happening in the first place, helping families. So I hear often, well, you know, if the parent isn't a good parent and there's these things happening, why do we want to, we just want to help the kids. Well, how do you help the child if you don't help the parent to become healthy?
I 100% agree. And I want to go a little bit more deeper into this after we come back from our break. Very fascinating. I know a lot more to talk about in changing our culture in order to change our health. And so this is... Dr. Orna Gill will be back. KCNR 96.5 FM at your cervix.
Celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Tuesday of the month at 6.05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. Hi, I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back, not to be recognized, but because it's the right thing to do. During these conversations, we'll learn what truly makes our community and the people in it. Join me the second Tuesday of the month at 6.05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now.
The McConnell Foundation is pleased to sponsor this year's Colt 45 season. We support hometown baseball in South City Park, part of the heart of Reading. Families, local businesses, and nonprofits make this community event successful. The McConnell Foundation believes the best way to build community is to support it together. Baseball is for everyone, from little leaguers to senior games. Thank you for rooting for our home team. Go Colt 45s!
Come see Little Women at Riverfront Playhouse, a timeless tale that has delighted audiences for generations is being performed on the Reading stage. Follow Meg, Joe, Amy, and Beth through the ups and downs of growing up. Watch as they laugh, cry, live, and love all through the strength of sisterhood and the power of family. Written by Louisa May Alcott, adapted by John Ravold, directed by Annie Bakalenikoff. Tickets at riverfrontplayhouse.net or at Enjoy the Store in Reading. Showtimes are Friday and Saturday, 7:30, Sunday matinees at 2, running July 20th through August 17th.
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
Morgan Stanley values long-term relationships with its clients.
Rick Hill and Rory Greek, financial advisors of Morgan Stanley's Reading office, know that building relationships begins with getting to know each client. Everyone has different goals, from planning for retirement to saving for a child's education.
Rick and Rory with the Pathfinder Group at Morgan Stanley can create personal investment strategies to help you meet your retirement, education, wealth transfer, and other financial needs. So call Rick or Rory at 223-4200. That's 223-4200.
Investments and services are offered through Morgan Stanley Smith Barney, LLC. Member SIPC.
As gun laws continue to tighten up across the country, Bastiani Arms will continue to provide our community with quality firearms, hard-to-find ammo, off-list fully built AR lower receivers, and the absolute best customer service. Get out of the grab-and-go box stores and come talk to a knowledgeable firearm specialist. The good guys at Bastiani Arms are real gun enthusiasts with two full-time gunsmiths on hand 5 days a week. Right now, Bastiani Arms is stocked up on hard-to-find ammo, 30-30, 38 Special, and 44 Magnum. More people than ever are exercising their rights to conceal and carry a firearm. Seth Stoke has over 20 years' experience in firearms and offers CCW classes, women-only CCW classes, and hunter education. Bastiani Arms has everything you need for firearms, and they appreciate you shopping local. Bastiani Arms, on the corner of Larkspur Lane and Wall Street in Reading. Join the revolution.
Welcome back. This is Dr. Orna Gill at KCNR 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, your talk radio. Thank you for joining us tonight on this very serious and important topic of violence in the home towards women, towards children, with some laser focus on strangulation specifically. I want to also mention that Shasta Regional Medical Center offers services for patients or clients who are victims of violence, both sexual and physical, emotional, and we offer confidential support services as well as medical services for all of those patients and clients who wish to come forward and to help to change our culture, as we were speaking earlier with Angela about, which was fascinating. So, Angela, again, you were saying that intervention, even in the smallest way, and group sort of support toward identifying those perpetrators and maintaining safety in large groups and intervening when you see something happening on a domestic or violent scale. Is there anything more we should know in terms of how to change the culture? Any other points of any pearls that you can continue to tell us that will help us to break these cycles?
I think it's really, really important that, let's see, how do I put this? So let me, about 85% of clients that come into One Safe Place are female, and about 10 to 15% are men. So men can be victims too, and I want to be very clear that we know that and we have services for men. However, it's predominantly women, you know, that are being abused in domestic violence situations and then also for sexual assaults. And so there's more women that we see coming in, and there's more fear for women to share and report things because they feel like they're not going to be believed. And so for us as a society, it's really important that we be open to listening to what somebody has to say about it, which is totally contrary to our justice system, right? Innocent until proven guilty. But think about that from the perspective if you were just raped. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden the onus is on you, you know, to prove that, you know, your history's questioned, your promiscuity's questioned, and all of those things. So, you know, that really is an important piece to changing the culture, is, you know, listening to those folks that need us to listen. And it's so funny because everything else, it's like, so I drive a Corvette. Mm-hmm. And if my Corvette was stolen, I can guarantee you I could call law enforcement. Everybody would feel bad for me that my car was taken. Nobody would say to me, why do you drive a nice car? Why did you get a car that was so nice? Mm-hmm. And why is it red and flashy? You know what I mean? It's just, it's a different dynamic. But we need to have some of that, you know, kindness and consideration for folks when they're coming forward, and at least be open to listening to it, because that is what helps to open and change and break the silence for people. And, you know, we are seeing a lot of our survivors being more willing to talk about the things that have happened, which I think also helps. That's part of it. Having these conversations with your friends. When you hear somebody make a derogatory comment about a woman or a person or a situation, call it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Through the years, as we have interviewed One Safe Place, and we've had you on in various programs, you used to say it takes 7 times. Now, is that is that the same statistic? Has it changed? Is it?
It's a national statistic.
7 times.
It's 7 times that it takes for somebody to leave and stay gone. We are tracking our data since we've been in the new building, and we're just changing over systems. But I think we are seeing that happen a lot quicker. We're doing follow-up calls. People are making that break with the, you know, addition of the Sierra Center and a longer-term stay. Before we built that, it was 11 days that people could come in. You know, it was the average length of stay. They could stay longer, but that was the average length because it was people on top of people in dorm-style living. It was safe, but it wasn't comfortable. And now the average length of stay is 54 days. So people are getting enough time to heal, to address, you know, maybe some therapy in addition to legal needs and housing and all of those things. So we are seeing the long-term effect that is actually working. People are making that permanent break and not feeling like there's so many different pressures that it's just easier to go back. I am concerned right now about the state of our housing market in Shasta County, especially with the car fire. There's not a whole lot of affordable housing available, and that is a huge barrier for women, for families, for dads with kids. If they can't find a permanent safe place to live, there is that natural draw to going back to what they know versus, say, going to the Mission, who has a great program. But it can be scary when you don't know, so people may make that choice. So right now we are looking for any landlords that have places that want to rent to our people. But I think, you know, it's better here. and we have a lot of resources to offer. Our numbers have grown from 6,500 visits for service in 2015 to almost 10,000 today. That is a result of doing things like this, of the community being interested, of partners like Dr. Dugan, Shasta Community Health, SRMC, all of our law enforcement partners, yeah, and all of the agencies that are on site and just partnered with One Safe Place. So people are getting to where they need to go. I don't think that increase in numbers means we have that many more victims. I just think that means we had them there, and now they know where to go.
Yeah, there's no doubt that your program is outstanding, and it's really changing the lives of so many people on such a grand scale. I wanted to bring up vis-a-vis the law enforcement and all the hard work that they do. Also, note that in a 2013 study that surveyed all of those cases that did go to trial of women who finally did come forward with sexual assault allegations, only 20% of those perpetrators that were prosecuted were convicted. So it's just it can be a huge, you know, it's important for us to think about how to change more, not just how we intervene, but how we, you know, interact with the legal system and how we, you know, resource them and how we think about, you know, the consequences that should come about in prevention as well.
For sure.
Yes. And so also, I wanted to ask Dr. Dugan again. You were talking a little bit about cycles of violence in childhood, and there was a question that Linda brought up earlier today.
Well, the question was, how can you have two kids in the same family and one is like, oh, my God, it was so bad, and the other one is like, what are you talking about? So they're viewing the same in the same household two complete different stories.
That's a great question, and it's one we get a lot, too. And often in the child that turned out to not have those bad outcomes, so the child that succeeded, the child that was able to endure the abuse and become resilient and lead a productive life versus maybe the child that struggled with drug addiction or homelessness or crime or other maltreatment issues later on in life. The child that turned out to have a more successful life often had somebody in their life that intervened early enough that really instilled in them those good protective factors that allowed them to escape that cycle of violence, that allowed them to break it. Part of those protective factors instill hope. You know, the child has hope. The child has a pathway to exit out of their situation and a way to do it. And when I talk to families, both personally and professionally, most of those people that grew up in those homes can name one person that really changed their life or helped them get through it. And unfortunately, it's not always, that person's not always available for the other sibling. And there's, like Angela, we were talking about over the break, there probably are some natural, maybe even genetic tendencies for that person to overcome the challenges they face. But it's a person who instills those protective factors early in their life that sets them on a different path than their sibling.
Social connections can be really important for that, too. So at One Safe Place, we offer a camp for children, you know, every June, ages 8 to 15. Not Camp Hope, Camp OSP.
Camp Hope
is a fabulous program. But, you know, Camp OSP is still there for the children and offers that same component, kind, caring adults, and children learn in that they're not alone and that they have a hope for a different future. They get to make those choices, and that is so important when you learn you're not locked into this forever. That's not all there is.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. That sounds really amazing. So, yeah, I mean, this is something that all connects because, you know, violence is really at the very root of what we're talking about. When you talk about strangulation, when you talk about sexual violence against women, against men, and when you talk about, you know, domestic violence in general, these are all basically control issues, basically, right?
And
all
in control.
All of them, mostly control. And obviously mental illness that, you know, goes way beyond that. But we are going to come back after this break and talk a little bit more about why and how that happens, what it does to our brains, even as young children, and how that predicts our behaviors in the future. And also how we can, again, always want to talk about prevention and intervention on these issues. So thank you very much. We will be back. This is Dr. Orna Gill, 96.5 FM, KCNR.
Christy Minstrels are returning to Reading's historic Cascade Theater August 3rd. This hit-making machine won Grammys and spawned the careers of Kenny Rogers and Kim Barnes. The new Christy Minstrels, Saturday, August 3rd at 7:30. Get tickets today to relive the heyday of the 60s popular folk trend with the new Christy Minstrels. 530-243-8877 or cascadetheater.org.
When you're looking to add a pet to your family, Haven Humane Society is a place to start. Hi, this is Mark from Haven to tell you that shelter pets make the best pets. With kittens, puppies, dogs, cats, bunnies, guinea pigs, hamsters, snakes, birds, and more, Haven has a pet that is the right fit for your family. We also provide education, training, spaying and neutering, dog licensing, and so much more. If you're looking for a way to help, our amazing volunteers have fun with the animals while helping us to save lives. For more information, call 241-1653 or visit havenhumane.org. Like us on Facebook and follow our progress as we work towards a day with no more homeless pets in the North State.
Come see Little Women at Riverfront Playhouse, a timeless tale that has delighted audiences for generations is being performed on the Reading stage. Follow Meg, Joe, Amy, and Beth through the ups and downs of growing up. Watch as they laugh, cry, live, and love all through the strength of sisterhood and the power of family. Written by Louisa May Alcott, adapted by John Ravold, directed by Annie Bakalenikoff. Tickets at riverfrontplayhouse.net or at Enjoy the Store in Reading. Showtimes are Friday and Saturday, 7:30, Sunday matinees at 2, running July 20th through August 17th.
At Shasta Regional Medical Group, we're focused on the health matters that matter to you, like preventive care. Our physicians are committed to keeping you healthy with the right vaccines and wellness checks for your children. For seniors, we can review prescriptions to make sure you're on track. At Shasta Regional Medical Group, you have an integrated network of caregivers and specialists working to serve you in a compassionate, patient-centered environment. We're conveniently located right across the street from Shasta Regional Medical Center. To make an appointment, call Shasta Regional Medical Group today at 605-4260 or visit us online at ShastaRegionalMedicalGroup.com. Shasta Regional Medical Group. Your primary care is our primary concern.
The McConnell Foundation is pleased to sponsor this year's Colt 45 season. We support hometown baseball in South City Park, part of the heart of Reading. Families, local businesses, and nonprofits make this community event successful. The McConnell Foundation believes the best way to build community is to support it together. Baseball is for everyone, from little leaguers to senior games. Thank you for rooting for our home team. Go Colt 45s!
Welcome back, Reading. This is Dr. Orna Gill here on the Dr. Orna Gill Show, North State Now, brought to you by our title sponsor, the Reading Civic Auditorium, Shasta Regional Medical Center, and Carlene's Bar and Restaurant, as well as Black Bear Diner. We are here on 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, Your Talk Radio, KCNR. Today we're talking with Linda Bott, Dr. Sean Dugan, and Angela Jones, and myself, Dr. Orna Gill. We're talking about violence and abuse in the home, on the street, in the world, basically. And we're talking about what it means, how it starts, how to end it, basically. So let's start with how it starts and what it does to you, really, and how it affects and changes you, Dr. Dugan.
Sure. So, kind of in layman's terms, deep within our brain, there's a center that's responsible for us fighting or flighting, meaning that we need to fight to survive or run away or freeze. And this is way back when we were hunted by other animals, when our ancestors were. So if you came across a bear or a lion in the woods, you were going to get up and run or try to fight. And so it elicits blood flow to the parts of our body that need that oxygen. So our muscles, our lungs, our heart. It actually prevents us from urinating or stooling most of the time because you don't want the animal to have a trail to follow you. And one of the other things it does affects our memory and our mind. And so imagine if you're 2 years old, 4 years old, 6 months old, or 10, doesn't matter. And, you know, your father is strangling your mother. Your father's yelling at your mother. There's abuse. There's mother abusing your father. That is going to provoke that constant state of fight or flight. And those hormones actually change our body and they change our brains. And there's actually studies in both children who experience a lot of abuse and adults who experience the forms of abuse, including PTSD and other things like war. And these studies show that the brains of the children and the adults who experience chronic trauma are actually smaller in certain structures than the brains of the adults and children who don't. So this not only changes our personality, affects our memory and our development, it actually changes the shape of our brain, literally changes it to where you could see it on an MRI or a CT scan with the naked eye. And so we know that it changes it both on a cellular level, but even on a physical level. And it's incredible, and that impacts a person across the course of their lifetime.
Yes, no question about it. And that's important to take note of. And also, that's one of the reasons we brought in that cultural point of intervention that Angela was speaking about. And I wanted to bring it to you, Angela, at this point and say, please tell us about those programs you offer at One Safe Place and break it down for us. Tell us about the attitudes we can continue to support and engender and what you offer the community and how we can support you.
So One Safe Place is there to believe the victim and to be a support for the victim. We are advocates first and foremost. We have a 24-hour crisis hotline. That's 244-0117, 244-0117. That's 24 hours a day. If you're in a dangerous situation, you need to call. You'll be able to talk immediately to an advocate. It is confidential. We have a shelter on site at One Safe Place. We have advocates that will work with you, sit down with you, and do a danger assessment to find out, you know, what your situation is like, what a safety plan might look like. If you have children, we can address custody, restraining orders, all of those types of things. We have Dr. Dugan on site if there's been strangulation and there needs to be an examination. All kinds of programs there and partners on site. We have therapists on site. We have partners at the district attorney's office and crime victim assistants who will either come over or we can go there. So there's that court advocacy piece. We have health and human services, adult protective services. There is just, you know, services across the spectrum for anything that you need. And if it isn't an on-site partner, we can either get the partner to come there and see you or get you there to see them. So even though when we talk about violence, sexual violence or domestic violence, people are coming for the same reasons, we also realize that everybody is an individual and everybody has their own set of barriers. And so our advocates are really good at that case management piece, at looking at what is going on, what are the barriers, what do we need to do, how do we make this happen in the safest way possible. If you apply, you want to apply for a restraining order through court, we help with those documents. And we also have an advocate that goes and stands in court beside you. So there is a lot of support that's there. We always want to encourage reporting because that's important, because we don't want to see, you know, the same abusive people abuse others. But at the same time, I want to make sure any victim that's out there that's listening knows that isn't a requirement to come to One Safe Place. You don't have to be fearful that if you come that you have to do that, because that's one of the myths that I often hear that prevents someone from coming in. So if there's anything going on and you're unsafe, you feel unsafe, come and see us. Walk into the office or call the 24-hour crisis hotline.
100%. And we are grateful and lucky to have us as a pillar in our community, Angela. I also wanted to mention, just from the medical point of view, if you do experience assault, sexual assault, et cetera, it's important to consider that the earlier you come forward for medical attention, the better it is in terms of documentation and making sure also that you are protected from an STD point of view, from a pregnancy point of view, HIV, hepatitis B, HPV, all the Vs, you know, everything. You have to have exams that go head to toe. Obviously, you have to consent for those exams and never be done against your will. And very important also to also have toxicology screens because there may be medications inside you may not even know of. And that's one of the things that gave us so much information about the roofie drugs and other drugs that are used as date rape drugs that are becoming much more spoken about with the Me Too movement and people who are starting to change the culture from within, talking about different forms of sexual assault, noting that it's important to come forward and not be afraid. The average victim takes approximately 2 weeks to come forward to a doctor and to law enforcement. So we want to try to encourage victims to make it shorter.
Right, and Shasta Regional Medical Center has a fantastically beautiful start room. Mm-hmm. You know, they make it as easy for somebody to come in as possible. And an advocate from Wednesday Place is called at that time and comes in and is with the victim through that whole exam process.
That's something exceptional. Yes, Shasta Regional Medical Center is extraordinary in that respect. That the ER facility is outstanding, and the confidentiality and the ability to feel safe in that place, as well as follow up gynecologic care, follow up family practice care, all can and medical and therapy support. You know, psychological, psychosocial support, all in place. And at your fingertips if you're ready, willing, and able to start to take care of yourself. So a very important topic in women's health and societal health, something you don't usually hear in a women's health talk show, but one that I am so proud to bring and so thankful that the three of you could speak with us about today in this very important topic, violence in women and sexual assault. So I'd like to once again thank North State Now, which is every Thursday of the month. You will hear Dr. Orna Gill's show at your cervix, all sorts of topics for women. And now, as you know, society and men and children and all that. And we will continue every fourth Thursday of the month.
I think it's fascinating to take the covers off, you know, because that's basically is. It's like what's underneath the blanket.
Yeah, under the rug.
Under the rug. Or however you look at it, it's but we have about 3 minutes left. Closing thoughts.
The important thing, I think, is to recognize that the Me Too movement has had its hiccups. It's definitely controversial in some circles, but it's certainly starting to open our awareness. And I'm glad that we have the opportunity to talk about sexual violence toward women, at least from my perspective, talk about the long-term consequences and the short-term interventions that we can start to institute, especially making our presentation to law enforcement, to places of safety, and to medical care earlier and in an expedited fashion that will be much more protective and effective in stopping this feature of our real in life for all of us. That's my closing thought. What about you, Angela?
Well, I just appreciate the invitation to come on the show tonight with you and to be able to talk about these medical risks and the issue of violence and lethality and, you know, how we look at changing that with our children for the next generation and make people safe today. It's so important. And thank you, too, Linda and Sean. It's been an interesting show.
Right. Sean, would you like to give your last thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. Getting the word out there is really important, so I want to thank you for that, because this is something that even the medical community is really waking up to. Strangulation and sexual assault's been known, but there's more and more information coming out about sexual assault. And the strangulation piece is sort of like a newer player to the table, and a big component of sexual assault as well, too, as we're finding when we do these exams. And so I appreciate you allowing us to spread the word there. And I really want to instill hope for Reading in the community. You know, these programs go towards prevention. We can help these victims. We can break these cycles for them. We can make sure the perpetrators aren't out there doing this to other people, because it's usually not a one-stop shop for these guys. And so I think that these are really important aspects and pillars of our society. And going forward, I really do believe with these and some of the other prevention programs we have out there that we are going to lower the ACE scores in the next 10 to 15 years. We are going to make Reading a safer place for women and children. I truly believe this. I don't want to just be doing SART exams and strangulation exams the rest of my life here. Yeah. You know, I really believe we can prevent this with the other programs we have with One Safe Place. So thank you.
Thank you.
We are changing the culture.
Yes, yeah. We are. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Make the change.
Make the change, everybody. Thank you once again. This is Dr. Orna Gill with my beloved guests, Dr. Sean Dugan, Angela Jones, and Linda Bott. Appreciate very much. Have a very good evening. Good night.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.